The top story is a new media report points to the possible use of a British intelligence base in the U.S. assassination of top Iranian general Qasem Soleimani. Iran's foreign minister says the Islamic Republic never tolerates Israel's presence near its borders, noting the regime will have no place in the future of the region. Mexican police clash with protesters holding a rally in the capital, Mexico City, to mark the 53rd anniversary of a massacre of students. Welcome to the program. Our top story, an investigative report has linked a British Royal Air Force base to the U.S. assassination of top Iranian general Qasem Soleimani. London-based journalist Bartleby Pace has come up with the report that concludes the secretive Menwith Hill intelligence site in Yorkshire was probably used to assist in the 2020 deadly drone strike in Iraq. Pace says both U.S. and U.K. personnel stationed at the base operated, quote, beyond public scrutiny and accountability. Campaigners are now putting pressure on British ministers to explain whether data from the site was used to assassinate Soleimani. Iranian general was the commander of the Al-Quds, of the Quds force, that is, of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, when he was targeted outside Baghdad's airport. Iran's foreign minister says Tehran will never tolerate the presence of Israeli elements near its borders. Hossein Amir Abdullahian said Iran is worried that Israel and terrorist elements threaten the security of neighboring Azerbaijan. He noted that Iran has been expressing concern over the matter since last year's conflict between Azerbaijan and Armenia. Amir Abdullahian stressed that Israel will not have any place in the region's future. He said Tehran and Baku are working to address issues related to their bilateral ties through diplomatic channels. Elsewhere in his remarks, Iran's top diplomat slammed Bahrain for normalizing ties with Israel, adding that the move will not improve the situation for the Al Khalifa regime. The Iranian Army's Air Defense Force has unveiled a new surveillance radar along with other defense equipment. Yusuf Jalali reports.
This Iranian radar system just detected and destroyed an intruding ballistic missile. Not a real missile, but a virtual one. Dubbed Shams, the radar system can create simulated electronic warfare scenarios to train fresh military personnel. The system was unveiled together with other defense equipment, all built by the Iranian Army's Air Defense Force.
The fully indigenous Shams system is a long-range radar simulator and allows us to design and execute a range of war scenarios. This way we can enhance the preparedness of our staff members against potential missile attacks and other aerial threats.
Hormuz was another radar system that was put into service on Saturday. It's a medium-range tactical radar capable of detecting and tracking air targets at high, medium, and low altitudes. Iran's Air Defense Force says the new equipment will significantly increase the country's air defense capability.
The major feature of Hormuz radar system is that it can calculate the speed of the target while accurately calculating the distance and sending the data to the fire control systems. I should say that all of the equipment unveiled today and earlier were designed and produced using domestic know-how. We no longer need to import any such equipment from other countries.
Iran has for four decades been under U.S.-led arms embargoes, which prevent the country from purchasing any foreign-made arms. This has over the years prompted the Islamic Republic to try to develop its own weapons to ensure its security. Every year, the country unveils a range of domestically built defense equipment, from UAVs to missiles, as a show of its military might against the backdrop of U.S. sanctions.
The Islamic Republic views U.S. sanctions as a tailwind that has pushed the country toward self-reliance. While these latest military equipment can be counted as a case in point, Army officials say this is just the tip of the iceberg, as Iran has indigenized over 80% of its defense arsenal. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iran's human rights attaché in Geneva has urged the international community to take immediate, tough and effective measures to end Israeli crimes in Palestine. Mohammad Sadatinejad blamed Israel for its crimes, including genocide, ethnic cleansing, systematic torture, and arbitrary detention against Palestinians over the past 7 decades. He stressed that bringing the Israeli regime to justice for its crimes against Palestinians must become one of the international community's demands. He noted that Palestinian children are accused of throwing stones at Israeli soldiers, while hundreds of them are held in a dire situation in Israeli jails. The United Nations has published a new report on Israel's demolition drive, which is displacing hundreds of Palestinians. We discussed that issue with our guests in our news review program. Take a listen.
A United Nations report indicates that nearly 100 Palestinians were displaced by the Israeli demolition drive in the occupied East Quds in August. A figure published by the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs marks the highest number of displacement in 1 month in East Al-Quds this year. It says that 26 Palestinian homes were destroyed in August, either by Israel or their owners. Israeli authorities demolish Palestinian homes and occupied territories on a regular basis, citing different pretexts, including lack of building permits. Some Palestinians demolish their homes themselves to avoid paying the costs if the process is done by the Israeli municipality. Israel's demolition of Palestinian structures has made around 200 people homeless across the occupied West Bank this year so far. Joining us now for the program is Saeed Zulfikar, political analyst joining us from Paris, and Jim Kavanaugh, founder of thepolemicist.net, joining us out of New York. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program. I guess we'll start there in Paris with you, Mr. Zulfikar. Welcome to Press TV, sir. Your initial thoughts on what takes place to the Palestinians, their homes, their rights, and why they have no protection to try to stand up for this happening to them.
Well, the intention of the Israelis, which is an open decision taken and declared often, is to reduce the number of non-Jews in Jerusalem and in the occupied territories, but specifically in the old city of Jerusalem. They want to reduce, they have stated it, several prime ministers, one after the other. Now Netanyahu and Bennett have stated that the population of non-Jews must be reduced to about 28% at the most. And consequently, the policy is slowly ethnically cleansing the non-Jewish population that has been living there for centuries. The Sheikh Jarrah area is only 2 kilometers from the Aqsa Mosque. The Aqsa Mosque itself has been, in the last few months, facing identity obliteration by the increased intensification of enforced visits of Jewish settlers, of extreme right-wing Jewish settlers protected by the police, who have been going into the Aqsa Mosque and having rituals there. The aim is to completely obliterate the identity of the mosque. Now, the Sheikh Jarrah, which is the area where the buildings have been demolished or people have been expelled from these houses, the Israelis claim that originally, 100 years ago, the land on which these buildings exist, which are inhabited by Palestinian refugees, were owned by 2 Jewish religious groups. 100 years ago. But Israel, the whole of Israel, is built on stolen Palestinian land, and all the houses that the Israelis have built are built on stolen land, whereas the racist argument is that the Jews are allowed to own the whole of Palestine, and any non-Jew is automatically only a temporary resident there who can be discarded and expelled.
Okay, allow me to welcome Mr. Jim Kavanaugh, Saeed, to the program. We'll get back to you, founder of The Polemicist. Hello, Jim. Always a pleasure to have you on Press TV. So tell me how it is, Jim, when the West purports to being the champions of human rights, how they can back an apartheid regime that blatantly engages in a campaign, like with Mr. Zulfikar, to his point, of ethnic cleansing, without saying a word.
Well, yeah, the Nakba continues, and as they did in 1947-48, the West supports it. You know, the United States, which is the prime power here, and the political caste of the United States considers itself completely committed to Zionism and to what Israeli human rights organizations describe as a regime of Jewish supremacy from the river to the sea. The Palestinians just don't count as much as the Israeli Jews. And the Israeli Jews get to displace them and dismiss them and treat them as second-class citizens, as non-persons, really, as people to be swept out of the way, as the American settlers swept the Native Americans out of the way. You know, the Israeli army has said that Jews are a minority of the population in the West Bank, Gaza, and Israel. And they have to, as the previous speaker said, the Israeli government wants to. That's why they had to cut out the Palestinians in Gaza and put them in a prison. But they want to reduce the number of non-Jewish people living in the West Bank and what's now the territory of the West Bank and Israel. And they're doing that. They have a program for doing it. They said it quite explicitly. Nobody's hiding anything. And the powers that be, the Americans and the Europeans, just don't care. They're destroying houses that were built with European humanitarian aid. And the Europeans sit back and let it happen. Mm. So this is, you know, this is the capitulation of the Americans and the Western Europeans to the Zionist project and their participation in it.
All right, gentlemen, thank you both for gracing us with your presence on the program here. Saeed Zulfikar, political analyst, joining us from Paris, and Jim Kavanaugh, founder of the Polemicist.net, joining us out of New York. And that's a wrap for the segment of your news review program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Welcome back. Algeria has expressed anger over French President Emmanuel Macron's recent comments about the country, calling them, quote, inadmissible interference in its internal affairs. In a statement, Algeria said it had recalled its ambassador following Macron's remarks. Media had quoted Macron as saying that the former French colony was ruled by a, quote, political military system. He also put a question mark on Algeria's official history, claiming that it was totally rewritten. This row comes amid already growing tensions between the two countries over visa issues. On Tuesday, France said it will significantly reduce the number of visas to citizens of Algeria, Morocco, and Tunisia. France said it took the decision because those countries refused to take back their nationals who had been denied visas. Algeria called Paris's decision unilateral and summoned the French envoy to lodge official protest. Clashes between police and protesters have erupted on the streets of the Mexican capital on an anniversary marking the 1968 massacre of students in the city. Police in riot gear fired tear gas to disperse thousands of demonstrators who descended on Mexico City, chanting slogans and raising their fists. The protesters fought back, hurling rocks and projectiles. The Tlatelolco massacre occurred when the Mexican armed forces opened fire on thousands of university and high school students demanding democratic reforms in the then authoritarian Mexico. Activists say up to 300 people were killed during the crackdown. Russia has reported more than 25,200 new infections from COVID in the past 24 hours. The figure is the highest daily case tally in Russia since July. The country's total COVID infections are now above 7.4 million. On Saturday, Russia also logged 886 new deaths that bring its total fatalities to over 208,000. COVID has surged in Russia in the past a few months, partly because of the Delta variant. The strain has given a surge to the disease in the U.S. as well. On Friday, total fatalities there surpassed a grim threshold of 700,000. That's equivalent to the population of the U.S. capital, Washington, D.C. A Reuters tally shows that global deaths from COVID have passed the 5 million mark. People across Brazil have held new protests against President Jair Bolsonaro's government and its handling of the COVID-19 outbreak there. Protests took place in dozens of cities, including Rio de Janeiro. People called on President Bolsonaro to step down. His approval rating has fallen to 22%. That's the lowest since he took office in 2019. Brazil's president is under fire for imposing insufficient public health protocols to fight COVID-19. There, he's also accused of financial irregularities in acquiring vaccines for the disease. Rising unemployment and inflation have added to public discontent as well. Similar protests have taken place against Bolsonaro in the past weeks. Thousands of pedophiles have operated inside the Catholic Church establishment in France since 1950. That's according to a commission tasked with investigating the scandal. The head of the commission has been quoted as saying that the research uncovered more than 3,000 pedophile priests or other members of the church. Jean-Marc Suave called it a minimum estimate. The official release of the report is due on Tuesday after 2.5 years of research. Findings are based on church, court, and police archives, as well as interviews with witnesses. The independent commission was set up in 2018 in response to a number of sexual abuse scandals that shook Catholic Church in France and worldwide.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
Tell a little about yourself.
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who is also in the art of
writing. Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, October 3rd, 2021. Yes, it's autumn. I'm Atefa Erfani, hosting this program today. And as you know, the Listeners Special program is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and your messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. If you have any messages for our listeners around the world, then record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this Sunday program. Remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. So please keep us company until the end of the program. Back. This is Listeners Special, your program. And as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very useful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers, because these reception reports enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an EQSL card in the time of pandemic. So, here, I appreciate those of our listeners who have sent us reception reports, including Mizanur Rahman from Bangladesh, who is one of our regular listeners, Denis Kosolapkin from Russia, and Richard Cook from the UK. So, Mizan, Dennis and Richard, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. And many thanks to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us emails or letters from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here, and later during the program, I will read their emails or letters. First of all, Anjum Hussein, one of our regular listeners from Kashmir, has sent us an email. Michael Suberg from Sweden has sent us an email. Michael is also one of our regular listeners. And Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us this email. And also, again, another regular listener from Chile, Hector Friahofre, has sent us an email. And the last but not the least in this program is an email from Yari Kurhonen, one of our regular listeners. Many thanks for sending us these emails and letters from around the world. Dear listeners, please stay with us. I will be back with these great emails after a short music. Again, I'm back with an email from Kashmir. This email is from Anjum Hussein, one of our regular listeners. Anjum Hussein from Kashmir says, Salam and condolences on the eve of Arbaeen of Ashura. I am a regular listener and I like and learn from all the programs you play, especially the ones focusing on morals and ethics and Islamic teachings. Enlightening us on socio-political issues is also a very good measure. Thanks for playing my interview around Ashura about Muharram in Kashmir. I will be writing to you more soon. First of all, salam and warmest greetings to you, Anjum Hussein from Kashmir, one of our regular listeners. Anjum Hussein, many thanks for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. Of course, at the time we are reading your email, a few days has passed since the Arbaeen ritual. Thank you for expressing condolences on the Arbaeen ritual, which is, for your information, dear listeners, the anniversary of 40th days passed after the tragic martyrdom of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, and his 72 companions. Imam Hussein is the third infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. We also, again, of course, a few days has passed since the Arbaeen ritual, but we also do express our condolences on the tragic martyrdom of Imam Hussein and his companions. Anyway, it seems that you like the programs on Arbaeen, Ashura, and the special programs of Muharram and Safar. So, as you said, these programs enlighten the listeners on social, political issues, and many thanks for your support, your encouragement, and commitment to our radio. So, it seems that your interview with IRB English Radio was broadcast recently, and that's great. Yes, we broadcast these interviews in our programs, especially in Listeners Special, so that's great. And John Hussein from Kashmir, again, thank you for writing to us. So we are looking forward for another email from you, Anjum Hussein from Kashmir. And from Sweden, we have another email from one of our regular listeners, from Michael Sjöberg. Michael, I wish I'm right in pronouncing your name, Sjöberg. If there is any problem, please let us know about it. Michael from Sweden says, "Dear producer, many thanks for the nice EQSL you sent me a few days ago. I like EQSLs. Better for the environment, cost effective, and it is indeed a quick way to confirm reports. But maybe you can reply with a physical QSL card 1 or 2 months a year. And on a special broadcast, a public holiday or similar. That would be a great idea, I think. Kind regards. Salam and warm greetings to you, Michael Sjöberg from Sweden. And I do express my appreciations to you for sending us this email from Sweden. So it seems that you like the EQSL. As you may know, we send our dear listeners these EQSLs at the time of pandemic, because sending paper QSLs is not possible in the time of pandemic. So you can be patient after the coronavirus is over, and then we can send you our promotional items and, of course, the paper QSL cards. Many thanks for writing to IRIB English Radio. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with other emails from around the world, and this time from Bangladesh, from Sultan Mahmud Sarkar. Welcome back. As I said, here we have an email from one of our regular listeners, from Sultan Mahmud Sarkar from Bangladesh. Let's see what he says. Hello, dear IRIB English Radio. First of all, take my special greetings from Bangladesh. Hope you are well with all the friends of IRIB English Radio. I listen to your programs regularly. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to write for you an email for several weeks. I love IRIB English Radio. I love Iranian culture. Iran is worth to be respected for the way it is moving, ignoring the hegemony of America and the West. I wish you all good health during the horrible pandemic. All the best. And special salam and greetings to you from Iran, Sultan Mahmud Sarkar from Bangladesh, and warm thanks to you for sending us this great email. And we also wish you all good health during this horrible pandemic. We wish you all good things and good job during this time. As you said, we are in the time of pandemic. And so my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card, Sultan Mahmud Sarkar from Bangladesh. And we're so happy that you love our programs. As you said, you love IRIB English Radio, you love Iranian culture, and that's great. So we hope this mutual relationship between IRIB English Radio and you continue until the end. So write to us soon, and of course, tell us your views about our programs. And from Chile, We have an email from Hector Ferriahofre, from one of our regular listeners. Hector says, "Dear friends at IRIB English Radio, please accept my greetings from the city of Santiago, Chile. Regarding listening to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, I am always attentive, but the bad propagation has not allowed me to have the opportunity to tune in to your radio regularly. However, I do hope that the technical problem will be solved very soon. I will be able to listen to your programs and appreciate the traditional music and interesting programs. Best regards from Santiago." Hector Friahofer from Chile, salam and warmest greetings to you from Iran. Many thanks for sending us this email. I don't know actually what you mean by bad propagation, but I hope this problem soon will be solved and you could be able to listen to our programs, as you said. Maybe at a time you have problem to tune in to IRIB English radio programs, maybe you can refer to our website, www.parstoday.com/en, and there you can also find the online radio and the archive of the programs. I know most of you love the shortwave radio and traditional radio, but, you know, maybe you have sometimes the problem and you lose the opportunity to tune into IRIB English Radio, then you can refer to our website. Many thanks for writing to us anyway. Hector, write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with an email from Finland. Here I'm back with an email from Finland from Jari Kurhonen. Jari Kurhonen, one of our regular listeners, says, "Hello from Finland. I was able to hear the signal of IRIB English Radio from Iran. The signal was poor to fair for a while, but the station faded out soon after it had given the station identification. I enclose MP3 clips about the reception. It would be a pleasure to receive a verification from you. Best regards. Salam and warm greetings to you from Iran, Jari Kurhonen from Finland, and thank you for sending us this email. And what a pity you had the problem in listening to IRIB English radio programs. So maybe we can inform our technicians and engineers about this problem, and soon your problem be solved. You know, we received the MP3 clips you sent to us. Thank you for that. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card. Jari Kurhonen from Finland, write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. Wishing you all the best and, of course, health and safety in your life, we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special. Keep in touch with us and have a good time.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to englishradio@irib.ir. That is one word, englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pastoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pastodayenglish. Thank you all for being with Arabi English Radio.
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Years passed since the brutal assassination of Saudi dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Her widow and advocates are pushing for accountability and action from the Biden administration. Former President Trump personally defended the Saudi crown prince, who's thought to be behind this, but President Biden had promised to punish the perpetrator. The Biden administration just suffice to come up with a report on the U.S. intelligence community's assessment of the murder, which said that MBS approved the operation in Istanbul to either capture or kill the Saudi journalist. Let's watch a report.
Jamal Khashoggi, a Saudi-born, U.S.-based journalist and outspoken critic of the Saudi government, was assassinated on October the 2nd, 2018. His death shocked the world because he was killed in one of the most brutal and unusual ways possible. On the day of his assassination, Khashoggi walked into the kingdom's consulate in Istanbul. Khashoggi never came out of the building.
Where is Jamal Khashoggi?
What do we know about really what happened to Jamal Khashoggi?
Turkish police insist that they know what they're looking for.
Well, the Saudis haven't been telling the truth right from the start.
Horrifying accounts have emerged of how the 59-year-old was murdered, who was responsible, and what happened to his remains. After more than 2 weeks of denials, Saudi Arabia eventually admitted that he had been killed in the consulate. The Saudis insisted that he was murdered in a rogue operation. But the international community demanded answers. Turkish investigators said video and audio recordings prove that he was tortured, killed, and dismembered. Further findings revealed that the gruesome murder was ordered by the highest level of the Saudi leadership. Later on, the United Nations confirmed it as well.
I have insisted that the killing of Mr. Khashoggi is a state killing. It is not a killing by rogue officials.
The Saudi government said 11 people had been indicted in connection with Khashoggi's killing. But a report by the CIA determined that the killing was ordered by no other than Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. The Saudis later claimed that what happened to Khashoggi was the result of a failed interrogation. Ample evidence provided by different intelligence agencies have proved otherwise. Khashoggi was once close to the Al Saud royal family and served as an advisor to the regime, but later he fell sharply out of favor with Riyadh. In September 2017, he he left the kingdom and went into self-imposed exile in the US. In his Washington Post columns, Khashoggi was highly critical of the Saudi crown prince. The case of Khashoggi has come to be known as one of the most outrageous examples of how a government targets its critics. It has also exposed the fact that Saudi Arabia's Western allies are absolutely unwilling to risk their ties and trade deals by taking a firm stance against gross human rights violations committed by Riyadh.
Welcome to the Spotlight. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Allow me to introduce our guests in this edition. Human rights lawyer Daniel Kovalik is joining us out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Historian and journalist Bryce Junkers is also joining us from Hassel.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to the show, gentlemen. Let me start with Daniel. 3 years ago today, Daniel, Washington Post Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi was killed. CIA concluded that MBS had ordered a killing. The Saudi crown prince has not faced any punishment yet. Why is that?
Well, for the main reason being that the U.S. values Saudi Arabia as a political and military ally in the Middle East, and it values it more than human rights. I mean, that's what it comes down to. It values it more than the human rights of Saudis. You know, Saudi Arabia is a very repressive regime vis-a-vis its own people, and of course, Saudi Arabia is a brutal regime towards its neighbors like Yemen and Syria. And so this does not surprise me at all. You know, while Biden promised that he would get justice for Khashoggi, he also said he was going to stop supporting Saudi Arabia's brutal war in Yemen, which he hasn't done that either. So it's business as usual. It's disappointing, but not surprising.
Okay, Bresh, Saudi Arabia is notorious for stifling voice of dissent, no matter who they could be. They even do that to their own members' royal family, like MBS. Had his own uncle, Prince Ahmed bin Abdulaziz, who was a former interior minister, and others arrested a few years ago. So the sky seems to be the limit when it comes to oppression in the House of Saud, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Of course, as was mentioned already, Saudi Arabia, as ever since its foundation, with the support of the United Kingdom back then, been a highly oppressive, highly repressive regime that, of course, drapes itself in an Islamic flag and calls itself the custodian of the holy mosques of Mecca and Medina, but in reality is a almost medieval style brutal government system in which thrives on oppression and on bloodshed, and has shown time and again that they are not afraid to take lives, to torture, to murder, and even to commit mass murder, as they've been doing in Yemen. But of brutality, this has all kicked into a higher gear ever since MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, has come to de facto power. Of course, he's theoretically still just the crown prince, but in reality, as everyone knows, he is the actual power behind the throne of his father. And behind much of the new system that rules over Saudi Arabia.
Right.
The entire government consists mostly out of his cronies and his yes men who follow his every command. And we have seen this when he starts imprisoning and even executing members of his own family, members of his own inner circle, when he starts persecuting people that were not even actually opposed to the Saudi monarchy in the past. Most obvious and most famous case in point being Jamal Khashoggi himself, who, let's be honest, was not really a massive dissident. He was not, let's say, an Arab nationalist Republican or one of the members of the Shia resistance in the eastern regions of Saudi Arabia. Not at all. He was a man who had a long history and a long contour of service in service of the Saudi monarchy. He just simply disagreed with the way things were being done under NBS, and that is what cost him his life. So there is definitely, there should not be a shock or should not be a surprise when you see that this man got basically tortured to death and sawn into pieces on diplomatic ground in a foreign country. This is something that sounds absolutely wretched, and it does, unless, of course, you realize, until you realize that this was Mohammed bin Salman was pulling the ropes and who was ordering this. This is exactly, completely according to his modus operandi. This is how this man, unfortunately, who is in charge of one of the biggest economies in the world, this is how this man operates. This is how this man has worked for years.
Mm-hmm. Now, Daniel, in terms of human rights violations, the Saudis have a long record as well, and that includes repressing the minorities in their own eastern province, like Bresht, also the rightful nation, and also taking the lives of women and children in Yemen, yet they are removed from the UN child killer list. Let's have your comments.
Again, all this is very politicized. What is good for some countries is not good for others. We see, for example, now the ICC has announced in terms of its investigation into human rights abuses during the war in Afghanistan, it is not going to investigate the instigator of the war in Afghanistan, the United States. It appears that the rich and powerful countries are able to evade justice as well as their allies, while, you know, poorer and less powerful countries cannot. You know, I think the other thing that needs to be pointed out, I mean, it's no coincidence that it just came out that the CIA itself, I believe it was now, we learned in 2017, hatched a plan to kidnap and kill Julian Assange, a journalist that has been critical of the United States. Mm-hmm. And so the killing of Khashoggi is nothing averse even to the United States in terms of what it does. So again, none of this is surprising, but we see these double standards being applied mm-hmm. all the time.
Rich, let's have your comment on that too. I mean, how could Saudis be removed from that blacklist of the United Nations as child killer state? There are proof, you know, on the ground, and you know what I'm talking about. And the war is still going on.
Yes, it's exactly like it has been mentioned. The United Nations, for all the good it has done and for all the lofty promise that it held and still holds, of course, it has there have to be some sort of a national discussion, negotiation, and a way in which we try to prevent war. So obviously that there needs to be something like that in a modern day and age. But the United Nations was constructed originally and still maintains that premise, was constructed from the very start, when it began, of course, with appointing the permanent five members, when it began to give veto powers to the superpowers, which can override the democratic process of this international body. Obviously, we have had a slight democratization by the fact that now also countries that, like China, like Russia, of course, that are not walking necessarily the line, have a veto power as well. But this by itself does not make it more democratic. Now, when it comes to the ICC or the International Court of Justice, because the International Court of Justice and the International Criminal Court, and when it comes to things such as the list of violators of children's rights, these are all matters that are very often discussed with focus groups, with lobby groups, And there is always a lot of pressure by the superpowers and a lot of money going on in circles such as this, unfortunately. And this is why we see this this terrible perversion of justice taking place over and over again. It is surprising to me that after the assassination of Jamal Khashoggi, that the United States has allowed the truth to even come out at all. There was originally, Donald Trump, of course, has been defending Saudi Arabia for a long time. But in my opinion, the fact that we even know, us as the non-initiated ones, are sure that Jamal Khashoggi was murdered in the consulate, that by itself was a little bit, I think, of a threat that the United States released, because at that point, and even still now a bit, they have been afraid for quite a while now that they might be losing control of MBS, that MBS might be a little bit too much of a little bit too much.
Mm-hmm.
I've already kind of made him lose face to the international community, but that's, unfortunately, that's where it stops. The United States will not go further yet. MBS is not yet one of those puppet rulers that the United States is willing to drop, like they have done, for example, with Saddam Hussein at a certain point, and where they dropped him completely. MBS is not at that point yet, because he still toes the line of U.S. imperialism. Mm-hmm. But because he tried to go a little bit too far in terms of what the United States wanted to allow, they allowed the CIA to leak these reports to confirm that, you know, MBS was behind it. But at this point, we see it's been 3 years to actually prosecute him for it. They have kind of hit him on the fingers a bit and said, you know, you have to watch out with what you're doing. But they are still shielding him from any actual physical repercussions and any actual punishment for the crime that he has committed so far.
Okay. Now, Daniel, let's turn to the U.S. As a candidate ahead of the Democratic primaries in late 2019, in front of a large crowd of people, Joe Biden said, and I'm quoting it, that Khashoggi was murdered and dismembered, and I believe in the order of the Crown Prince. Almost 2 years ago, he was asked if he would punish senior Saudi leaders for the killing of Khashoggi, and he said yes, he would, and that the Saudis must pay the price. Yes, Saudis are paying the price, but they're paying the price of the U.S.-made weaponry they're using in Yemen.
Yeah, well, again, that's absolutely true. I mean, I think Biden, during the campaign, said a lot of things that he didn't mean and that he ended up retracting later. In this case, he knew he had to say something like that. He had to distinguish himself from Trump, trying to portray himself as somehow more committed to human rights. Mm. But I'm sure once he became president, people sat him down from the defense industry and said, you know, Saudi Arabia's Arabia is worth billions of dollars to the defense industry in terms of arms sales. And, you know, got him straight that he would not be able to go after Saudi Arabia for Khashoggi or to end the U.S. support on the Saudi war in Yemen, which, again, Biden had promised to do. So we see the U.S. relationship with Saudi Arabia to be pretty much seamless, regardless of who's in power. And let's remember, of course, in terms of the war in Yemen, that Obama began the support of the Saudi war in Yemen in 2015, mm-hmm. when Joe Biden was vice president.
Right. Bresht, let's draw this comparison one more time. You know, former President Trump did openly support MBS and U.S. ties with Saudis at any price. But what about President Biden? He acts differently. He did not meet MBS personally. He had somebody else, security advisor, to meet him. But what's the outcome? What difference does it make? The outcome is that justice is not served. The U.S. is still selling arms to the Saudis and all that.
Yeah, for them, it's a game of optics. It's a game of propagandistic outlook. Mm. You need, for the United States system to survive, you need a form of discussion and, of course, a few points of diversion of divergence and a point of bickering between Republicans and Democrats on matters that, in the end of the day, are quite unimportant and don't touch the fundamental principles. We've seen that over and over again. The Democrats, they try to appeal to the more liberal-minded, the more quote-unquote progressive-minded people, whereas the Republicans try to appeal to the war hawks and the evangelical Zionists that exist, unfortunately, quite a lot in the United States. And that is what they've been playing at. Yeah, Joe Biden he will say, you know, I have done, he can basically say, I have done something already. I don't meet with MBS personally. Does it matter at the end of the day? Of course not. But that's why Agnes Callamar, the former UN rapporteur on extrajudicial killings, she mentioned, she said, at the end of the day, nothing has fundamentally changed. The only thing that is different now is that the United States has admitted, has condemned in words what has happened and said, you know, this is not proper. But when then the matter came on to put personal sanctions against MBS, personal sanctions, which is a very popular thing to do in the United States, they've been sanctioning hundreds of people over the past couple of years, the United States immediately said, no, we want to recalibrate, they use the term, recalibrate our relations with Riyadh, we don't want to rupture it. So in reality, what does that mean? That means absolutely nothing will fundamentally change. And this is that game that I have been playing for decades. Indeed, as has been said by Daniel, that the Democrats were involved in supporting the war in Yemen in the first place. Yes, the Republicans under Trump, they might have supported that war even more vigorously. And now Biden is trying to reel back the amount of support they want to give. They do the same thing with the Zionist entity all the time. Yes, Donald Trump has moved the capital, the embassy to Jerusalem, whereas Obama officially criticized the West Bank settlement that Benjamin Netanyahu was doing. Did Obama actually do anything against Israel?
No.
Of course not. This is purely palaver. This is purely just talk and purely window dressing that they've been trying to do. And this is what we're seeing now as well.
Exactly. Now, Daniel, let's take a look at it in a different way. Also, Khashoggi maybe is not a, American citizen. What about 9/11 attacks in which lots of Americans lost their lives? We have this less didactic report coming out under the Biden administration, and families of victims are asking, for this. But still, you see the Saudis are just there, and it's proven fact that the Saudis did play a role in that.
Yes, and even though that's true, and even in the face of these newly released documents, the U.S. press has done all it can to downplay the Saudi role in the 9/11 attacks. We know the 15 of the 19 attackers were from Saudi Arabia. We now know and have known for some time that Saudi diplomats played some role in supporting the attackers, as you say. And yes, thousands of Americans lost their lives. And yet Saudi Arabia was never punished in any way for this. In fact, we know that when George Bush canceled all flights, he grounded all flights in the United States after 9/11, at the same time he was flying out the family of bin Laden out of the country. So Saudi Arabia has not only not been punished by the U.S. for 9/11, it seems to have been rewarded for it, and that is quite shocking.
Presh, former UN Special Rapporteur on Extrajudicial Killings and current Secretary General of Amnesty International, Agnes Callamard, you just mentioned, she's expressed disappointment in the Biden administration. She says that the U.S. authorities, have to be careful about their pretense of being concerned with human rights and democracy. Pretense of human rights. Spot on, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Of course, she mentions, she says it in the typical careful language of a diplomat, but in reality, you can see it seep through, of course, the disappointment and the anger that is in her words and that she speaks here. And I think this is absolutely warranted. We've been, when you analyze matters that are happening, especially in West Asia, especially in the wars involving the United States, everything is so... It's so hypocritical. All the claims that the United States have done, the claims that they fight for human rights, that they fight for democracy, that even the claim that they are defending themselves against some sort of unknown international terrorist enemy, these are all lies, and everything is a very almost Orwellian way of speaking that the United States has been using for the past 20 years at least, because this. This is indeed, like Ms. Callamard said very aptly, just a pretense. They claim that they are looking out for human rights, but they're cozying up to the most rabid violators of human rights in the entire world.